Welcome to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents with your hosts, Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks.
Today on Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, we're going to be doing something a little different today. We always talk about, Dan and I, we always kind of throw our experience into the round ones every so often, but people sometimes ask, like, hey, like I just got an email. People ask, hey, how did you start doing this? Or how did you start doing anything online? And I've had to write some emails back to people saying, oh, this is what I did. This is what inspired me. And we'll get to that another time. And so for one of these episodes, we want to talk to Dan, who has had some experience in the past. And since we're still in October 2013, we're still doing the entertainment industry. And Dan had some background in the entertainment industry, so we thought, hey, this would be a great way to keep with the theme of the month, but also get to know a little bit more about Dan, the person that you get to hear every Monday and Thursday. So, Dan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joe. It's looking forward to my entertainment entrepreneurship experience story.
There you go. Well, I didn't write you a fancy intro or anything like that, so you're just gonna have to make one up in your head or something. So sorry about that.
That's okay. I'll keep dreaming of having one day.
There you go. And so, okay, to start off, since we talked a lot about the entertainment industry, let's look at what kind of entertainment were you involved in or still involved in right now.
Well, we'll treat it as a past involvement because that's kind of where I'm hoping to stay right now. But it's what I guess would be considered sports entertainment is what they call it now. But I have been involved for the past 10 or so years as a professional wrestler. And that's kind of a really obscure thing that probably a lot of people watched when they were 5 or 10 years old was the professional wrestling.
No, I watched during high school. Everyone was obsessed with wrestling. Now, we all grew out of it when we graduated high school, but we would spend...
Well, see, and there's where it stopped. You just said we all grew out of it. Not all of us grew out of it.
But, hey, I just don't want you to think it's just for 5 and 10-year-olds because we would spend... When we were seniors, it was like when we were at the very height of liking professional wrestling. My favorite wrestler was Rey Mysterio, if you wanted to know. And we would... Like, your senior classes in high school are a joke anyway, so... We'd all try and like come up with cool moves, and during like one of like our crap classes where we're not paying attention, we were literally in the back like practicing these moves on each other. And
where were your teachers?
She was in the front. We just didn't really listen to her. She was kind of one of those teachers that was very, she wants to be a teacher, but she also wants to be your friend at the same time. She's not going to come back and yell at us because she doesn't want us not to like her. She's one of those teachers, I'm sure.
So it was okay if you guys were hitting each other with chairs as long as nobody made too loud of a noise.
Well, we couldn't hit each other with chairs. I think that went a little beyond that. But a lot of like holds and submissions and stuff like that, like we'd practice all that.
Okay, well, see, and one of the, and we didn't just bring this up just to have small talk about wrestling because there is plenty of... podcasts about wrestling, actually too many. If anybody is interested,
well, do you have any that you used to listen to that maybe we could link to and show them some love?
There's a really good one called Art of Wrestling podcast, and it's been going for a couple years, and it's an independent wrestler who's had some time in WWE and stuff, but he's really out making it on his own right now, and he has a merchandise website that he sells videos, and he produces videos and sells old podcasts. And he has a really popular podcast, and he's sponsored by a bunch of the different, you know, large advertisers that sponsor a bunch of podcasts. He's got all these advertisements. So he's doing really well with the podcast, and kind of, he's a really big self-promoter. He has comedy shows he does. So he's this one of the guys that's, you know, just really branding himself and really created an aura around him without ever, you know, being a huge star like a Stone Cold or something like that. He's kind of doing it all on his own and bootstrapping his way to making money, not just because of the wrestling, but everything he's doing around the wrestling. So that Art of Wrestling would be a good one to check out.
Okay, we'll definitely link to him, show him some love, and maybe we can build a relationship with him as well. So, okay, continue.
Well, so I was saying the reason where I thought this would be an interesting subject to talk about, and it could be, you know, super dull. So if it is, we can cut it off quick. But because The way I started was in the wrestling business, so to speak, was when I was about 12 or 13, when the internet was first becoming really, even before it was really popular, but it was first getting somewhat mainstream. And my parents, I would always beg them to take me all these little crappy local wrestling shows around the area. And I was really big on the internet already. And when I would come home from the wrestling shows, I'd try to go on the internet and find out information on the shows I just went to. And there was just nothing. I mean, first of all, there's not a whole lot of things that are more backwards and more behind the times than professional wrestling anyways. I mean, let's just be perfectly honest. So for me, you know, as a 12-year-old, I didn't quite realize it. You know, you can't see the forest from the trees when you're in the middle of it all. But to think that these, you know, backwoods hillbillies pretty much would have some kind of intricate website with up-to-date results and information was kind of silly. But I didn't realize that. But I saw that void in the market. So I set out at the age of, I was probably 13 at this time, to create a website that would report these results and these upcoming events for my local little wrestling scene where all these little independent wrestling federations, are running independently. I was going to create almost this ESPN type website that would report on all these things. And that's kind of where it started. And by the age of 14 or 15, I started reaching out and developing relationships with these different promoters that were running these little wrestling promotions. And my desire was, although I always kind of thought it would be cool to be a wrestler, that was never my goal. I just wanted to kind of get on the inside, you know, maybe similar to if you or I were trying to get involved with, say New Media Expo or something like that. And we were offering like, hey, we'll, you know, maybe we're not speakers yet, but, reaching out to them and saying, we'll help set up something or, you know, just to get our foot in the door and just to develop these relationships. That's kind of what I was doing. And I was using my website to do this. At the same time, people saw me making these websites, these wrestlers, these other wrestling promotions that didn't have their own websites. And they were, emailing me saying, hey, will you make me a website? I'll pay you, you know, whatever, $50 to set it up and $20 a month to keep it updated. And I was thinking, cool. No one actually knew these people reaching out to me. They were from all over the country. They didn't actually know I was, you know, some 13 or 14 year old sitting in my bedroom at my parents' house. And they're mailing me checks every month. And I was maintaining a portfolio of about, probably at the peak, it was 12 or 15 websites, and I was bringing in quite a bit of money for, you know, a 13 or 14 year old that had no responsibilities and no bills other than, you know, show up to class and go to football and baseball practice and things like
that. So where did your drive to, or your skill in seeing, hey, there's a problem here, I'm going to fix it, where did that come from? Because a lot of people, they don't have that kind of intuition.
Well, it was one of those things, and a lot of people that create something out of nothing, it's the same thing they say. They went to find this resource or looked for this resource to use it themselves. And when they saw it wasn't there, that, you know, put off the light bulb in their head. Well, why don't I just create it? And that's what I was doing. I had that same experience at, you know, 12, 13, 14, whatever age I was. So I went to look for this website. It didn't exist. So I created it. And then people saw me create this website, and it was a bunch of guys that maybe knew how to use the internet, but didn't have a clue about basic HTML coding, which is all I was doing really. So they were willing to pay me, you know, $50 setup, $20 a month to maintain a website, you know, to do this. So that's kind of where it came from. And that was my entry into professional wrestling, was just through creating websites for people.
So how many websites at like your max point were you maintaining or keeping track of?
I'd say 12 to 15. And it was a few of them were for the wrestling leagues themselves, and a few of them were for the wrestlers themselves, and just it was a pretty good mix. And most of those people, they faded off pretty quickly because it would be, you know, you've had experience in the independent band scene, and you know that a lot of bands, is when they don't have instant success, they'll break up and go through many iterations. So because of that, a lot of these, you know, quote unquote clients weren't super long-term clients, but surprisingly enough, few of them I do still maintain contact with today, 15 years later, and I still see some of them face-to-face on a somewhat regular basis.
Are they all still wrestling and keeping like a site up and everything?
You know what? It's really interesting that the websites for these type things have not 100% disappeared, but a lot of the wrestlers don't even have their own websites, and that would even go down, you know, all the way up to the top, you know, guys like John Cena or something like that. A lot of the guys, they just have their profiles on the WWE website or something like that. They have their Facebook profiles and probably Twitter, you know, Twitter profiles that they maintain. but the website for the wrestlers themselves is just not really a popular thing anymore. And even some of the wrestling leagues that run monthly or weekly shows, their whole thing is based on their Facebook page or their Twitter profile. They don't even have websites for themselves, which is, you know, it's not probably the smartest thing, but it's really just not popular anymore. It almost was more popular back when I was doing it than it is now.
Well, go back to, okay, you got these 20 clients, I guess you could say, at such a young age, and many people, they struggle with finding just one client to do something. So what could people do to find that first client? I mean, since you got it at age, what, 13, 14, 15, whatever it was.
I guess my experience with that was that I wasn't actively looking for clients. I was just doing my own thing, but I was doing it so well that people took note of it. And so they started reaching out to me and saying, hey, will you do this for me?
So they all reached out to you then.
Yeah, and I think that's a model if you're okay with this growth happening organically. If you're not just trying to, you know, grow super quick. If you more are into the growing organically and you have the time to wait, or maybe don't even have the capacity to grow super quick, if you're doing something well enough, people are going to at some point try to figure out what you're doing, whether they're offering you money for it, or, you know, maybe they have some other service or some other way they can benefit you in trade. I think that's not a horrible model if you're, you know, like if someone comes to us and says, hey, you know, I really like how you guys are doing this podcast. I think you did it the right way. Will you help me? Or something like that. I mean, that's just a very basic example, but that's how my business at that point grew from there. Was just people seeing what I did and took note of it and then came to me seeking advice. Almost that, you know, I built an authority site and I became an authority in that space, and people saw me as that. So then they came to me to seek help.
So I guess you were doing something different, right? So this is what automatically may have have you stand out from other people, because you said a lot of people may not have been doing this type of thing. So you had something different already that automatically had you stand out from other people.
Yeah. And in the online space, I think it was much easier back then. And you'll hear people that started podcasting years ago before it was popular, or were one of the first people online to have a popular blog. It's when you're that first person into the space, it's a lot easier to be the outlier and have people look at you as somebody doing something different. So yeah, I mean, what we're doing on podcasting now isn't the same as if we started podcasting 10 years ago. Then we would have been the pioneers that people were more looking at, you know, to for advice. So I agree with that.
So, okay, so you were doing the online stuff, but I guess you didn't like it enough that you had to transition to actually performing in front of people. Is that what happened with that?
Yeah, so I think that's where we kind of transition into the more entertainment entrepreneur aspect of this. And these websites is kind of how I got my foot in the door with a lot of these professional wrestling groups, the local ones. And eventually, when you're around anything long enough, you kind of want to keep taking those next steps. So for instance, if you were to be someone going to conferences a lot, eventually you're going to want to be on the other side of the microphone. If you're learning, eventually most people want to go from being the person learning to the person teaching. And it was the same concept. I was at all these wrestling shows. I was a huge fan of it. I've been an athlete all my life. So it's not like I was, you know, some fat guy on my mom's couch eating nachos, watching professional wrestling. I was,
saying most are like that? Is that what you're saying?
There's a large majority, and no doubt.
I've never been to a match, so I don't know what the stereotypical wrestling fan is. So,
well, we got to change that, and you'll see very quickly. But let's just say a lot of the fans sitting in the audience probably aren't made to be in the ring, you know, doing the athletic performance. But I happen to be, you know, I was always playing baseball and football and all kinds of sports growing up. So it made sense for me to be sitting in the stands watching, but look at those guys and be like, hey, you know, I could do that kind of thing. So that whole, I guess, transitional period really took a number of years.
Well, how old were you when this happened? When this transition happened?
So I was probably about 15 or 16 when I really got out of that building the website business. So that lasted 3 or 4 years probably. You know, you get carried away in high school playing sports and get more into, you know, girls and all these things take a lot of your time away. But I still would attend the wrestling events because I had got my foot in the door there. I had made connections. And during my probably sophomore year of college, so about the age of 19, maybe 20, I just happened upon an opportunity to join one of these wrestling schools, the local ones. that actually, you know, taught you how to wrestle and gave you the training and all this. And that was through relationships that I had built during my website building days. And just by happenstance, I came across some people and got that opportunity. And it really took off from there. I went through about 6 to 8 months of training before I ever stepped foot in the ring. And it's really a violent process. I mean, a lot of people, you know, professional wrestling's fake and all of that. And it's surprising how unfake it is, really, because I guess the proper way to describe it would be like, it's predetermined, right? It's pre-scripted. What's going to happen is already decided and planned on, but the actual stuff going on in the ring, there's really no way to fake it. I mean, it's high impact, high violence, and it's painful, and it's very, very risky. So the training for this is very, very extensive, and a lot of people who rush through that end up seriously injured. So I went through this super long process, and a lot of people that I started with dropped out, but I ended up going through it all. And yeah, I did eventually become a professional wrestler and started doing it very frequently during my college days, and then, you know, throughout the rest of college and into my, when I began my professional career, I still very frequently, almost every weekend, was doing it and touring the country, so to speak, while I was doing
so
it.
So what separates, since you kept going with the month-long or the many month-long training, what did the other people not have that you had?
I think it's too cheesy to say, oh, willpower or stick-to-itiveness or anything like that. But I think it's really no different than anyone succeeding in any business, because it is a business. There's money involved, and anybody involved in it, or a lot of people involved in it, like myself, saw it as a possible future career, you know, to make it to that next level where you're collecting the 6-7 figure paycheck on the back end. So anybody that kind of has those dreams, they see it as a business. And it, you know, as we talk about on any of our podcasts, there's a certain number of people that just kind of can't hang. They don't have that ability to, you know, work through the tough times to see it to the good times. And I think it's not just mental when you're doing this professional wrestling thing, because I already talked about the physical aspect, and a lot of people do drop off because of the physical aspect, but it is also mental. And also we're traveling the roads, we're driving, you know, across the country, and little paydays, and but it's all that, you know, the idea of what might be, what you're working towards. And a lot of the people I was with weren't able to kind of keep that bigger picture that's in the future, weren't able to, I guess, envision that and see it as a possibility. Whereas I always saw it as, hey, I am actually good at this. I am better than some of the people around me. I think that I could possibly see this all the way and create a career out of it. So I think it's no different than any of the other businesses we talk about, just seeing the possibility and sticking to it.
So is the goal for everyone during that is to be on like WWE and the front and center? Is that what the main goal is?
Well, I mean, and I keep comparing it to the space just because I want to make sure to draw parallels to what our listeners might be able to relate to more. But, you know, there's the podcasters that are very happy getting 50 or 100 downloads a day and just having fun conversations with each other. And, you know, if they're friends or their family and they get a few stray listeners and they have no desire to make it bigger. Versus compared to our podcast, where we're trying to create something special, trying to create something unique, and trying to grow to that, you know, smart passive income level or that entrepreneur on fire level, where we are, you know, reaching a much larger audience. And I think it's the same thing. In wrestling, there's plenty of people that are happy wrestling once a month in their small hometown with their family and friends present, and they don't really care about going any further. But on that same show, there would be someone like me who, yeah, that Friday night I was in Uvalde, Texas or something like that, wrestling in front of the 300 people. But maybe Saturday I was driving all the way to Monroe, Louisiana to wrestle for another 500 people in front of a whole different group. And then I'd be, you know, driving back to Tulsa, Oklahoma for a Sunday afternoon show. So it was just a different mindset. And, you know, every one of those shows, you'd be surrounded by all different people, the people that were happy to be just there, but other people, you know, really trying to do something with it like us.
So in just this arena, like when you mentioned, hey, people like Entrepreneur on Fire and Pat Flynn and all them, a lot of people don't know who they are, but they make very good living, very well compared to most of America. But yeah, they're not at the Mark Zuckerberg level, and that's fine because they can still make a living in that area. With wrestling, is it to make a living, you have to be one of the big timers, or can you make a living in these small scrappy shows?
It's very difficult to make a living if you're not, you know, at that WWE level. There's some people internationally, you know, there's professional wrestling leagues in Japan and Mexico that the people are making decent livings off of. But if you really want to get to that high six figure, that seven figure level, WWE is really the only option. Randy Orton, he's one of the big names in WWE right now, and he recently got divorced, and his divorce settlement was just ridiculous how much money he was actually making. I don't think people realize the kind of dollars these guys are making. And he's probably a top five or top 10 paid guy. He's definitely not the highest paid guy, but even he is just making, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And there is tons of money here, and people don't quite realize it. But to answer your question, that's the top of the top, and kind of that next tier down, that highest tier is not that large. And the next tier down is quite a drop. So you can make it on the independent scene, which is kind of that Colt Cabana, that Art of Wrestling podcaster I was talking about. He's doing it, but he's really having to hustle. He's got about 10 or 12 different sources of income coming in between his podcast and selling his merchandise. And he's got some different businesses to help support other independent wrestlers that they can kind of join in and do some of this for themselves. But he's got all these different things going just to pay the bills. Whereas, you know, someone that was at my level, there was no way I was going to make a living off of it unless I was able to make that jump to that next WWE level.
Gotcha. Okay. So for a certain show in front of 500 people, how much would you make just for being in the ring, not with any shirts or anything like that?
Well, and I think you bring up a good point there. We would oftentimes make anywhere from a low of probably 50 for the appearance to a high of probably about 200. Now, you brought up the point about merchandise sales, and that's kind of where the business aspect of this comes in. If you really learn to market yourself, which is what we did, we had YouTube videos out there. We were constantly, Facebook wasn't as huge when I was really into it. It was big, but as far as like advertisements and things like that, that wasn't huge. But there was different ways that we were really marketing ourselves. So when we showed up to these shows, people really thought they were seeing some kind of celebrities, whereas, you know, I was just a college kid doing this, trying to get to that next level. But we kind of created this aura around us that we were something big in these small towns. So we would sell $300, $400 of t-shirts, of 8x, you know, autographed promotional pictures, hoodies. We had hats. I mean, we probably had 7 or 8 different items of merchandise spread out on our merchandise table. So I was making, you know, 5 or 6 times as much on my merchandise for each show as I was actually the money I was making from the promoter. And a lot of times, actually, a lot of the promoters kind of took note of that, and they had their own merchandise that wasn't selling nearly as well because they weren't doing the promotion we were doing for ourselves. And a lot of promoters would get kind of irritated and start asking for cuts of our merchandise sales, or like trying to barter with us, like, hey, we need to take 10% of whatever you're making there, mm-hmm. because no one's buying our stuff. You know, and that gets into normal business negotiations there. A lot of these guys were pretty much idiots, so it was easy to, you know, quite frankly, as someone that was more intelligent than them, to kind of negotiate them, you know, or just more or less strong arm them back out of the way. But yeah, to answer your question, the money was all coming from the ancillary profit streams, not the main one that, you know, supposedly should have been where it was coming from.
So looking just in hindsight right now, you have these people that are raving fans. I mean, they'll buy one of your shirts or they'll wear your hat or whatever, which is a big time thing. If people are wearing something with your name on it, that brings a lot of credibility to your name and your brand. What would you do differently to maybe harness that a little more and leverage it to expand your brand and your name even more?
Well, right now I would use, which is most obvious, if I were doing it again in this time period, it would just be a lot more social media. I see people doing it now because I'm still connected to it. I'm not doing it super actively. If anything, I do is more just casually, just for fun. But I'm still connected to a lot of the younger guys that are doing it now, and they're leveraging social media awesome. You know, Instagram is a huge one right now. Especially, you know, all these guys are more or less, you know, in super great shape. So they're putting up pictures of their bodies, and they got all the young girls, you know, retweeting their pictures and all that. But all that social media advertisement, they're able to, you know, promote their merchandise on social media and create even more of a desire for these people to buy their merchandise and buy, you know, give them their money for whatever it is whenever they see them in person. So I don't think I would change anything in hindsight. Probably some of my biggest regrets would be if I were to have tried to make a career out of it. I would have made a little harder push to try to pursue WWE a little harder and maybe make it a one-track mind going for that, because it's fun when you're traveling the roads and you're kind of the star in all these little towns. It was a lot of fun, but maybe looking back, that being the star in the little towns wasn't what was going to get me closer to the WWE. There was some other things I probably could have done. We had some runs in WWE with some, you know, week-long tours here and there, and you know, you get paid very well for going and doing these, I guess you call them, like tryout little tours with them. So you do like 5 stops in 7 days or something like that with the WWE and kind of get a taste of what it would be like, working for them full time. And it's really exciting. And those are the kind of things that really make you want to do that full time. And I think it reminds me of maybe like the DC event that happened in Bangkok. I think it was in Bangkok. That the Tropical NBA guys put on, I think it was maybe just a week ago. A lot of the podcasters now are putting out their DC Bangkok episodes and talking about the experiences they have. But that's when all the people that have these so-called lifestyle businesses all get together and kind of, you know, mastermind with one another. And I think it's that same experience when you get around these people that are doing this full time, and maybe you're not one of them yet, but getting around these people really give you that desire to work harder to get to that point. You know, it gives you that sense that, hey, there's people that are just like me that are doing this and making a living off of it and having a great time. Like, I'm not that far from them. So that same experience that you would have if you or I went to something like that, that's the same experience I had when I was in the WWE locker room. And, you know, maybe just taking more action to make that extra push to get there is a regret I would have. But I'm almost able to use that experience to now use towards this new venture that we're working on to maybe not make those same mistakes again. So I think it's good that I'm able to, or anyone really that have had experiences, to be able to draw these parallels to whatever their current projects are and maybe not make the same mistakes again.
Well, it's easy to look in hindsight and say, hey, if I just focus a little bit more on that, maybe I'd be a lot farther on. But I mean, then you wouldn't be here right now. You'd be doing probably something different if you'd spent an extra year doing wrestling. Just as like after a couple years of doing music for me, like, sure, now I can think, well, what if I had just stayed with like 3 more years with it? I probably wouldn't be married right now. I wouldn't be in Texas. I'd probably be working like some minimum wage job just trying to play music at the same time. So
you'd probably be hooked on cocaine or something.
Well, I was always afraid to take drugs. I've never tried any drugs of any kind, so I don't think I would do that. But it's just easy to kind of get in that mindset sometimes, and I catch myself sometimes doing that too. Like I played high school football, and I was about average, but I always think when I'm like watching on TV, I was like, man, if I had just spent like all my weekends and all my free time just training and learning, maybe I'd be playing in like a D3 or D2 school, and I would have had a great college experience doing that. And it's easy to start thinking that way, but I mean, in that time period, I mean, there's just so many different factors going on that you don't remember, and just where you are now, you're in a great place that if you had tried and do that other stuff, you wouldn't have ended up here. So I've just thought, I mean, I catch myself thinking that every so often, like when I'm watching football or whatever, or when I'm listening to a good song, some of that stuff comes back. But then I always remember, like, hey, I wouldn't be here if I tried to keep doing that. And just if I did keep doing that, it doesn't mean I'd hit success with it. I just want to make myself think I would have hit success with it. So,
Joe, you totally could have walked on the scout team at Georgia Tech.
I am not a Georgia Tech fan. Georgia.
Yeah, but I'm just going to go ahead and say you probably couldn't have walked on the scout team on Georgia. That's why I threw that Tech in there, because I thought the chances might be a little better.
I don't know. I think I went to college around the same time as Calvin Johnson, so I don't think I'd be walking on with Calvin Johnson. No, I would never, even if, no matter how hard I worked, I would never have been able to play D1. And I know that, but if I had worked really, really hard, I feel like D2 or D3, I feel like I could have. But you never know, just looking in hindsight.
Well, and that's just, I know we're about to wrap up here because we didn't want to keep this too long because it's a little off topic, but it fits in the Entertainment Entrepreneur Month a little bit, I think. But I think the one takeaway I wanted to emphasize is not to look in hindsight and have any regrets or anything like that, but really kind of leverage those experiences into whatever you're currently doing so that you're not making that same mistake again. Because, okay, it's great to say, oh, I have no regrets about my past experiences, but you can definitely look at that and translate those lessons into whatever you're doing now so that you're not down the road again looking back at both of these things and saying the same thing over again, because that can be a, you know, a vicious cycle if you keep saying, oh, no regrets, I'm not going to look at my past. But it's always good to learn from the past.
I believe that. That's true. I agree. Okay, so we talked about the branding. We talked about, I guess, like most of your story leading up to it. So where did you reach a point where it was kind of you realized that, hey, maybe this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. I need to do something else.
I think it was just I had progressed far enough in my career to where I'm really, you know, I'm making good money doing what I'm doing. I'm enjoying what I'm doing at my day job. I'm able to do things like this with you right now. And have my own little side projects going on. None of these things would really be possible if I had tried to pursue the wrestling thing long term. I kind of had I don't want to call it like a deadline or a cutoff that I imposed on myself, but I just got to the point where I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense anymore. It's very dangerous, as I mentioned earlier. There's high risk of injury. I was suffering some injuries, and it just came to the point where it's like, this is not going to be my career more than likely. So I can keep trying to pursue it and risk, you know, permanent death, dismemberment, or destitution. You know, that same thing I keep going back to. One of my favorite things that Tim Connolly said in our interview with him, you know, is this venture going to cause any of these things? And quite honestly, that venture could have caused death or dismemberment. So maybe not destitution, but if I had been dismembered, that would have taken all my money and then, you know, made me a destitute. So we hadn't talked to Tim at that time, so I hadn't heard those 3 D's, but that was kind of the same approach I took. Like, this is not worth it because of these 3 things. So that's what really led to me getting away from it. And like I said, I enjoy being able to do things like this. I enjoy being more relaxed and be able to focus on certain other things. And that really wasn't in the cards if I had stuck to that. So that's really the main thing.
Okay. Well, let's, just for an ending fun times, let's pull back the curtain for people who don't really follow professional wrestling as much, but they know what it is. Okay, so you said that the outcome of a match is predetermined, but all that going in, all those people doing all those crazy moves, like how do you stay, if you say it's not staged, then how do they, I don't know, how do they perform those moves?
It's a combination of a dance. So, you know, a ballroom dance is completely step-by-step staged, right? But a professional wrestling match isn't step-by-step staged. And a combination of, say, like an offensive football play. Like, you have the plan drawn out, but sometimes things don't go exactly the right way. For instance, let's take the Cowboys game that just happened, for example. They were trying to run out the clock. They called a play that was a running play, just to run up the gut, just to kill the clock. But something happened and the running back decided to bounce to the outside and run around the end. And there happened to be a holding call that ensued, and the whole that stopped the clock. Cowboys ended up having to give the ball back to the Lions with time to spare. And the Lions came back and scored a touchdown and won the game. That was not how the play was drawn up, but one thing led to another and the whole thing changed. That's kind of how a wrestling match is, a combination of that and a dance. So you can have this dance all choreographed nice and perfect, but things can change, like in that football play, and things can change. So if you look at kind of those 2 things together, there can be, you can kind of pre-script things super hardcore, but because things aren't ever going to go the right way, you kind of have to learn how to improvise and things like that. And that's where the real training comes in, because the root of professional wrestling is amateur wrestling, which is, of course, not scripted at all. That's a pure sport. So when you kind of blend these different styles, that's where a wrestling match kind of the very basic idea behind a wrestling match is. It's and there's all different levels, and I'm not trying to get super insightful here, because like you said, a lot of people aren't wrestling fans. They could give a crap about what I'm saying right now.
But they are interested in, like, when they always watch it, they're like, it's fake, but how do they know like each other's moves and stuff like that? Like I've always been interested in that.
And I mean, a lot of it is just training and intuition. It practice makes perfect kind of thing. You know, just like a ton of baseball practices, and then you're going to be better in the game. The same thing. Wrestlers have to train on a very frequent basis, which is another reason I got out of it. It's just to be at kind of a peak level, you have to train at a peak level, just like any elite athlete. And these people, they just become really good at everything, at anticipating what the other person's going to do. There's a level of communication while you're in there with one another so that everybody ends up, you know, unharmed or not hurt very badly at the end of the match. So it's just it's an art form. It really is. I mean, like I said, it's kind of like a dance. It's a very dangerous dance, but it's definitely a form of art.
So those, like with like the major ones, like WWE and whatever, they have long-term storylines, and so each match is scripted to go with that storyline. But with these small matches where there isn't going to be a big storyline, who determines the winner if it's just going to be a one-off type match?
There's always a storyline. That's the one thing that maybe you don't realize, but there's always something that they're trying to get out of a match, at least at the elite level, at the WWE type level, because, you know, if you go super small, there you can get anything. I mean, you could have, you know, Joe and his buddy wrestling in the back of the classroom, right? So if you go too small, you're going to get into something like that. But at the WWE level, there's always some kind of story that's trying to be told. Even if you look at it like, oh, here's two random guys wrestling each other, there's something that's intended to go on. So that's at the very start of it. That's what they say. They say, what is the story or what is the message we're trying to convey with this match? And then let's work backwards to put that match together.
So for the top famous wrestlers or whatever, are they only famous because the writers always made them the winner? Is that why they get to be the top ones?
It's very political. I mean, that's one of the things that would set it apart, obviously, from NFL or an MLB or something like that. Like, you do have to, you know, kiss the right butt, so to speak. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are really good out there that didn't make friends with the right people at the right time, and they're not in the WWE, whereas some people might either, you know, have met the right people or know, you know, shaking the right hands or had the right family members that got their foot in the door that can really, you know, that really changed things. But yeah, it's a lot of it's political because, you know, like I mentioned, there's every match, there's an idea going into the match of what the story is going to be. And regardless of who's a better athlete, if this story is supposed to tell one thing, that's what's actually going to happen. So yeah, I mean, it's very political.
So you didn't have full control of your fate. So even if you wanted to be and you were as talented as the top wrestler, you just may not have met the right people to get to that position to be the top wrestler. Your fate's not in your hands, pretty much.
It's all about playing the game.
Gosh, it's crazy. Well, then, last for just in a wrestling standpoint, what's your normal exercise routine for someone who wants to get, because you see the wrestlers, they're in great shape. Is there a secret going around? Do you have to take supplements and stuff like that?
Steroids.
Is it all steroids?
No. You know, back in the day with the whole Hulk Hogan thing, that was what got me into it when I was very young, was seeing Hulk Hogan on TV telling me to take my vitamins and say my prayers and all of that. And that was really the steroid era. That was kind of how baseball was in during the home run era with everyone on steroids. That's back in the early 80s and early 90s in that time period. That's when everybody in WWE was just super jacked up on steroids. Now, because of the whole MLB and NFL and everyone starting to crack down on steroids, WWE is a publicly traded company, so they have to crack down as well because they have shareholders to answer to if anyone dies or you know, goes roid rage on somebody, which has happened before.
Benoit.
But they have shareholders. Yeah. So they have shareholders to answer to, so they've cracked down on that a lot. I mean, really, it's just you've got to look good because nowadays everything's in HD. So if you have a small fat roll that doesn't look so hot in the mirror, it's really not going to look hot when you're on a 60-inch HD big screen. So a lot of times you'll see guys with super great physiques that might not be very good wrestlers, but that physique almost trumps the wrestling ability, which I don't think 10 or 15 years ago was as much the case. It was more how you're able to perform in the ring. But now, because of that whole HD era where every little flaw is magnified, a lot of times the guys with the better bodies, even if they have lesser skills, are the ones that perform or that succeed at the highest level. So I think just, you know, I'm not going to give out any fitness advice. We could bring James Clear back on to do that. But you know, there's no one workout routine or diet that works, but it's obviously essential to success in the sport.
Nice. Well, we appreciate you pulling the curtain back, and hopefully you don't get any backlash from it. But
I shouldn't, and I know I'll make sure if anybody has any interest at all in seeing me ply some of my craft, I'll have send Joe some YouTube links so I can embarrass myself even further in my Speedos and patent leather boots.
Love it. Okay, so you started at 13. You did that for a couple years building. Even if you just organically, you built a client list at age 13, which is pretty impressive. And then after that, you just worked your way at something until it just, hey, it didn't pan out. So you went on to the next thing. I know you dabbled in real estate, and we can talk about that another time. But some of it is just a process. It takes time for it to work itself out, and you may not get an immediate answer for if something's going to work or if something's going to be successful for you. It may take some time, and a lot of people, I need to realize that sometimes some things do take time. And we always want to say it's all about marketing and all that, and it's fun to say those words, but sometimes it just takes time to find where you want to be and see if it's the right thing.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, Joe.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about you. So, well, we're going to put links to all of Dan's past in the show notes. So make sure you go to entrepreneurshowdown.com and check out all the great pictures we're going to put up, the videos, all this fun stuff that you're not going to want to miss. So, Dan, we appreciate you taking the time, exposing some of your past to us, and we look forward to hearing more in the future.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for listening to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. Tune in every Thursday morning for another amazing interview. To hear all the past episodes and find out more, visit entrepreneurshowdown.com.